What we did with Dream With Me is we had you add more information. This is that meta communication piece. We had you add extra information to what you were saying so that Anne could know, oh, this is what she's asking me for. This is the intention she is behind what she's saying. And I remember, I think when you told Anne, like, I just want you to go on this ride with me and ideate, I think she was like, oh, I can do that.
Hi, I'm excited for you to have a listen to an episode I recorded with a wonderful executive coach, Amy Jin, who I've worked with for a long time. In this episode, she unpacks two very tactical tips that she gave to me and the entire Athena leadership team when she was coaching us. The first is a shorthand that I use to stop getting into these sort of arguments patterns with my co-founder that we found incredibly useful. And the second is more of a mindfulness technique that allows me to name an emotion instead of feel an emotion and get data from it. And while I've got you, it would be wonderful if you would check out Athena. This is the company that sponsors the podcast, and we provide excellent compliance training as well as a variety of compliance tools to companies. In particular, if your HR, legal, or compliance team is interested, please check Athena out. Amy, I'm so excited to have you on this podcast. You have been our longtime executive coach. Anne and I brought you on to work with us when we started the company. I think we were like 6 months, a year into founding. We were sort of like getting to know each other as we got to know you. So I feel like you've been a kind of key part of the company journey, then trained our executive team. So like, you know, sort of a broader group. And have definitely taught me a lot about like coaching myself, coaching the team, how to be a leader. This is like sort of my first venture-backed startup. So I'm really jazzed to get some of the lessons that you taught to me, to Anne, to our leadership team, and kind of share them more broadly.
Roxanne, I'm delighted to be here. And you and Anne and your leadership team are some of my favorite clients ever, favorite humans ever. So thank you for having me.
This is a treat. Okay, so I feel like one of the first places I'd love to start is, and maybe this requires a bit of context, like Anne and I are very different people, which like is true. What is it, the Ted Lasso? All people are different people. Like I'm kind of chaotic. I focus on opportunity. I worry that we're not moving fast enough. I wake up with like 12 ideas, most of them bad. And Anne is an engineer, very methodical, very similar to my husband. Something that, you know, is best left for a therapist to unpack. She likes to, you know, focus on like risk and making sure we've really thought something through. And you were really helpful early on in helping us identify kind of like, we would think we would be having different arguments, but we were really having a version of the same argument, just like about a different particular like instance, but it was really like we were falling into a similar thought pattern. And I'd love to understand like one, how you kind of saw that and helped us see that, right? Because sometimes like it can be tricky to sort of tell somebody like, you know, like they're doing something that is causing a frustration. And then two, I want to talk about the kind of trick you gave us that has really helped us to like name that. But maybe to start, yeah, like what was your experience of kind of recognizing, like did you clock us on day one that like, okay, these are the personality types. How did you see these patterns?
It was so, I think, natural just observing you. Being a third party observer, and not having a stake in the conversation and being able to observe not just what you were saying to each other, but your reactions to one another, especially the nonverbal ones.
Yeah.
And what you were each looking for from one another. There's a term here I want to introduce, which is meta communication. Mm. It's this idea of what are we communicating about what we're communicating? Right. So things like if someone asks me like, hey, Amy, how are you? And I say, I'm fine. You, Roxanne, would probably pick up on a lot more about what I'm really conveying versus just the words that I'm saying, right?
Totally.
And it was really interesting watching you two communicate and basically have a misunderstanding.
Mm.
Basically have a misunderstanding, because as a third-party observer, and this is something that I think anyone can do, is if you're feeling that that's happening with somebody on your team or your husband or your partner,
yeah.
Record yourself and take that third party observer seat to really listen to what one person is saying and then what the other person is reacting. And I think that's initially just how it was like very clear to me that there was a misunderstanding happening.
But I think what's so interesting is like, when I'm in a discussion, I'm like feeling it, you know? So like, I'm usually then not very observant, right? Because it's like, I'm having my own experience of like, I remember one, this wasn't necessarily with Anne, but I think it was someone else on our leadership team where I had to like turn my camera off and just be like, oh, my like internet's glitchy. Cause I could tell I was getting so worked up. Like I could see it on the Zoom, you know, I could see I was red and like, and I think what's really tricky is I don't think that I was observing my body language and I certainly wasn't observing, Anne's body language, but like, you're totally right that I'm sure had we done a bit of a, even like, yeah, if we, hadn't had the ability to work with you, just a recording of it. And then like at a not hot moment, like we're getting coffee and we're like, okay, we're going to watch a meeting or two. I think we would have been able to like watch it as observers, but like when you're in it, it's just like, you know, you get like such tunnel vision and like all you can see is like I'm being wronged or like, you know, you're like experiencing something, not observing it.
Exactly. I mean, even you and I in this conversation now versus the viewer who's watching this, they're going to be picking up on a lot of other things that we aren't when we're in it, right?
Totally.
And I would say this is a level of listening. This is something we learn in coaching school. There are three levels of listening. There's level one is what's happening in my own head. Like, what am I thinking about? What am I going to say next to what Roxanne said? Or, oh, you know, is my lapel in the way? You know, am I hungry?
Right. Do I have a light on my chin?
Yes. It's our inner monologue. That's level one. And sometimes we can get trapped just listening to that. And that's difficult. Level two listening is what most people call active listening, but it means my attention is completely on you, Roxanne, on my partner or the person speaking. And if I'm 100% over there, then I'm not aware of what's going on in my own head. This can be really, really powerful listening to really understand what somebody is thinking, feeling, and pick up on all those meta cues. Mm. But the third level, the one that we're really talking about now, is basically ambient listening. Like, what's happening in the space between us? What's happening in the room? Yeah. What's happening in the back and forth in our conversation? What's happening in our relationship? And if you're taking a step back as like the viewer of the TV show versus the talker, that's when you can really, I think, more easily practice that. Well, coming back to that situation you brought up with you and Anne and your question around like, how did you see this? I think that might be a really good place to look of, you know, how are we listening or paying attention to what's happening in the conversation? All the other things that are happening, not just, you know, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And then you gave us kind of these little words and phrases that I feel like are packed with meaning to us. And so one of them was dream with me, which I think really like has helped me communicate a bunch of things to Anne, like very quickly, like what mode I'm in. The particular pattern that this helped us with is I would come in the morning and be like, Anne, new idea, 5 new ideas. Let's build this and let's like serve academia and let's, you know, whatever. And she probably, if I had been doing level two listening, would probably start sweating, would be like, you know, a little bit like back, like, you know, face conveying like nerves. And her experience of this conversation very validly was that I was telling her to like drop what she was doing and go do these new unproven ideas, even though we had like aligned on an original idea. And then I would get frustrated feeling like, man, like, why doesn't Anne like new ideas and why isn't she being innovative and why isn't she like listening to me? And, you know, we would sort of both then like nurture these like grievances, both of which were like sort of correct. But it's because we were having two different conversations, I was hoping to have what ended up being called a dream with me conversation, which was just a bit more like unstructured, brainstormy, what if kind of thing. And Anne was thinking we were having a execution-oriented discussion that she was going to need to go execute on. So yeah, talk to me a bit about how you taught us to like use these phrases and like deploy them effectively.
So I think it was asking you, Roxanne, what are you hoping Anne will do or say after you bring in these ideas into the room?
Yeah. And even that's such a powerful question because I feel like even in personal relationships, sometimes I'm not always thinking about what I actually want the other person to do, you know, like I haven't totally thought that through.
Mm-hmm. Another way to look at that is maybe, Roxanne, what's your intent in bringing these ideas to Anne, right? And Anne, yes. what's your intent when you are, you know, conveying the execution risks or trade-offs to Roxanne? And I wonder, I was thinking about this situation. I was wondering if there was a little bit of assuming each other's intent.
Totally. And assuming based on how we would come to the conversation, right? Like Anne comes to conversations naturally in sort of an execution-oriented mindset. And so she assumed reasonably that that's where I was, like, which I think makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, you kind of take your own assumptions and like put them on someone else.
Yes. And as we know, when we do that, it can create issues because real intentions, like your intention right now, it's invisible.
Hmm.
So that what we did with Dream With Me is we had you add more information. This is that meta communication piece. We had you add extra information to what you were saying so that Anne could know, oh, this is what she's asking me for. This is the intention she is behind what she's saying.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think when you told Anne, like, I just want you to go on this ride with me and ideate, I think she was like, oh, I can do that.
Totally. And like in a confined space, that's very clear that that's what she's doing. And I think it's super reasonable from her perspective because, you know, it is hard when you have like a bunch of things to do that are very tactical and like, you know, you're feeling time pressure. And so like, I think it's also been something that's been helpful for me to say, like, I want to ideate and for her to say, like, amazing, let's do that Friday. Because like right now I got like a bunch of things that I need your input on that are like pressing, you know, like they're time sensitive. And I think that that I feel like even I can respond in sort of a reasonable way because it's like you're not saying never. You just say not right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think anyone watching this can use this as how they use this, right, is I think a very, very, very common example is, you know, when someone pings you on Slack or says, hey, or email, hey, Roxanne, can you do X thing?
Yep.
And the thing they leave out, again, the meta communication, the thing they leave out is by when?
Yeah, like, I think there's so many things are left out, which is why Slack, I think, is amazing, but really can be tricky. Like, I started doing more Looms. And when I started doing them, I was, you know, like Loom where you kind of record yourself the video and then you send it. And it can be like over a PowerPoint or something or whatever. But what's funny is I started doing them because they were faster for me, right? Talking is like three times faster than typing. But I remember, I want to say it's like our new BDR. Or somebody said, oh, I now know you're not angry. And I was like, oh, you thought I was angry? And they're like, yeah, when I get a Slack from you saying like, hey, why didn't you email this person, email them back end of day? I think you're furious. And normally I'm like, yeah, I might be a little annoyed, but also I'm like, you know, just wanting to check in and here's why I care about it or whatever. And I thought that was interesting too, that like you can assume a certain tone or intent that's like totally not there.
That's exactly right. It's also the simple idea of like, oh, hey, I'm a little low energy today because I'm sick versus like, oh, wow, Amy seemed really disengaged in that meeting.
Totally. So if I'm, you know, sort of following the logic, I thought you had some magic insight as a coach. But what you said is that actually anybody, literally even Anne and I probably, if we had recorded a couple of conversations and then had like a calm, measured moment, hopefully with an oat milk latte, to observe this, we would have caught like, oh, interesting. It seems like something is going on. So that's like point one is like, you know, just sort of like observe both the what is said and the body language of both people. And even me might have been able to pick this up. Then it seems like point two is have a conversation about like, what is your intent? What do you hope to have happen with this conversation? And if both people can kind of express that, a lot gets learned there. And obviously this does require the ability to reflect and accurately know what you're hoping. And then three is like, based on that information, you can come up with shorthands that might like explain the vibe you're having today. So for me, if I'm like kind of chaotic in an ideating space, if I tell Anne Dream With Me, she now knows I'm expecting her to dream and, you know, ideate and there's no execution and I'm not saying we're going to go do any of this. And she can then like understand the space that I'm hoping she enters or tell me like, great, but we're going to do that Friday. Did I catch the how to debug relationships?
I think that's beautiful. Yeah.
You gave it to me. Yeah. I just put 1, 2, 3. My 1 year training as a consultant allowed me to put things into three bullet
points. It serves you well. Slide.
The second thing I was hoping to talk about is something I use a lot now, which is naming an emotion and saying, like, anger is here, frustration is here, fear is here. So I'll give an example. Anne and I were entering, or I can't remember, we were debating to entering into a partnership. And I was like feeling a certain way. Like, I was just like, every time we talk about this partner, I feel a little like tightness in my chest. And I'm like, I don't know why, but every time I'm just starting to feel anxious. And I told Anne, I said, anxiety is here. And I'm trying to understand like what that might be telling me. And it was really helpful because then we were both able to unpack like, oh, interesting. Why, you know, why might you be feeling anxious? Is it because you think this partner actually isn't like dealing in good faith? Is it just like maybe we've been burned in the past and so we're sort of having almost like a reaction to it, but it's not correct? And there was something really nice and defanging about being able to say like anxiety is here instead of I am anxious, because anxiety is here somehow felt like I was being a little like Poindexter, you know, like anxiety is present versus like I'm scared, right? Like it just sort of felt like I was being an adult, like versus like being a little bit more of a kid of like hold my hand. And so, yeah, I'd like love to learn a little bit about like why this works when you suggest people use it, et cetera.
I love what you just said. So first, let me point out the things that you're doing that are really working so that we can dig deeper on them. I love that you're saying that it requires less, I guess, courage or self-management to say anxiety is here versus I'm anxious.
It's very sterile. It's just an observation.
You know, neutral, right? It feels neutral, yeah. Right? It doesn't have an implication on my skill or am I a good CEO or am I a good leader, right? Or do I have my shit together, right?
Yeah.
And for anybody who is an entrepreneur or a leader, especially in the last 4 years in our market, there's a lot of fear. So I think what you just said is so, so phenomenally useful of like, anxiety is here. Fear is here. Caution is here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anger. I feel like that sometimes happens where I'm just like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the next thing you did was, well, what might it be telling me? What might it be telling us? That is exactly the next step that I always recommend, because emotions are these incredibly quick information givers from both our nervous system, like stress response, fight or flight, all these things, and from our like body systems, right? And when we ignore them, we're not getting the benefit of the data that they bring to us. It's like you're looking at your dashboard and you just black out an entire section of it. So I love that you're using emotions as data. And that comes from a woman named Susan David, who talks a lot about emotional agility.
Mm. And what does emotional agility mean?
It's exactly that practice. It's noticing what emotion is here. You're naming it first, and then you're naming it with that neutral separation of so that you can stay the observer of that feeling versus be hijacked by it, right? When I am anxious happens instead of anxiety is here, that emotion has taken over your car and is in the driver's seat and your amygdala is literally hijacking your entire system. When you say anxiety is here, it really allows you to get that little bit of space that allows you to turn on and come back to your prefrontal cortex, which is where all your higher logic, reasoning, right, math, thinking really can happen. I think we trust people more when we learn that they're aware of their own emotion in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's something like, in a way, very childish about an adult who like isn't acknowledging that they are like having an emotion. You know, you're just sort of like, okay, like, yeah.
Yeah. So, and really my word for what we're really talking about, the topic here, Roxanne, is mindfulness. This is the benefit of being present and not being, getting on the train of each one of our thoughts or emotions. Yeah. And being able to stay in a presence which is calm, which allows us to access all of our resources and to actually solve problems. Like when you and Anne noticed that you were, you know, the anxiety was here with that partner, did you end up you know, getting to or getting better information or making a better decision?
I think so. I think we were able to kind of unpack, like, okay, you know, almost like a consultant, like, okay, anxiety is here. Why might we be anxious about it? Is it that we think there's like something we're misunderstanding about the agreement? Is it like there's information that we should have that we don't have? Like we almost were sort of able to map it out, you know, and then like do something with it instead of just staying at the like, I'm anxious. Why I'm anxious? I don't know. Stop it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Like, you know, just yes. This like spinning about the emotion. Instead, we were sort of able to turn it into, again, a more Poindexter, like, what must we like, you know, what must we do with this emotion, you know, kind of thing. But I think that that's like much more productive in a work relationship.
Yeah. And I love using the word technology here. I think this is a piece of language technology that enables us to think. It enables us to operate our human systems. The language technology being as simple as the, you know, exactly that rephrasing, anxiety is here versus I am anxious.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's just something that felt very like I'm in control versus I'm being taken for a ride. And it sort of vaguely reminds me of, I know we're both like parents. I heard someone describe like, if your kid is melting down, it's like they're not giving me a hard time. They're having a hard time. And it's like, I feel like that is like such a nice like reframe, you know, of like, I don't know. It's just, it's funny how like little phrases, dream with me, anxiety is here, like can switch like how, whether you feel like in control or whether you feel like you are being taken for a ride. And our little lizard brains, they're full of surprises. Amy, thank you so much for one, teaching me these tricks that I use now, like on the regular, and two, sharing them here. I feel like they feel very actionable. They're sort of like little digestible chunks that someone can take. And even if they do not have the benefit of an incredible coach like you, I think there's like things that even small teams could take and operationalize themselves, which is cool.
Yeah, I hope so. And Roxanne, that's one of your superpowers, is being able to distill out extremely useful things out of the ether and package them and communicate them. So thank you for bringing those forward.
Little digestible chunks. We can only take so much. You know? Cool. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, Roxanne.
I've been waiting my whole life to say this. If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and follow us on LinkedIn, because that's the only social media platform where we hang out.